We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Esports Biz Show. I'm your host, Justin Jacobson. This week we'll be discussing esports teams. Just as a disclaimer, nothing here is intended as legal advice, as everything is for educational purposes only. This week's guest is Peter, known as PPD. Peter is part of Nouns Esports and is the founder of a North American Dota Challengers League. PPD is a former legendary competitive Dota 2 player, including competing for Complexity, Evil Geniuses, and Optic Gaming. He's also the former CEO of esports organization Evil Geniuses. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Happy to be here.
My pleasure. So to start, tell us about your past gaming experience. What was the first game you played, and how'd you get involved in the competitive scene?
Okay, well, for the first game, my earliest gaming memory is getting the N64 way back when, playing Mario 64, you know, the one where you go collect all the stars. That was kind of the beginning of the addiction, I would say. And then my first esports experiences were, you know, really the spawn of the internet with Warcraft 3. And just getting on like the ranked ladder there, playing Counter-Strike 1.6, that was really big as well. And then that transitioned into Call of Duty, World of Warcraft. I played, you know, a lot of Age of Empires, you know, all these kind of competitive games. I grew up in a lot of kids around me in my neighborhood. And so we would actually just have our own LAN parties before the internet was a thing. So we were moving quick on this stuff. It was a good time. But my first real esports title was Heroes of New Earth in like 2010, 2009 sort of range. And I attended my first esports tournament, DreamHack Winter 2011 in Jönköping, Sweden. And that was my first, you know, that's where I fell in love with the competitive scene and going to events and competing in front of crowds and all that kind of stuff.
So what was it like kind of competing in these huge tournaments and playing for millions of dollars? And, you know, what was that all like?
Well, at the beginning, it wasn't for millions of dollars, right? Like the first tournament that we went to, we didn't have a sponsor, right? Everybody in my Heroes of New Earth community was super excited to go to DreamHack, but it was in Europe, right? And I was American, and, you know, 80% of the teams that were at that event were from Europe. So it was, you know, a train or a short flight, right? Very affordable. But for me, you know, it was $1,200 for a plane ticket. And I didn't, you know, I was still high school, freshman in college, like didn't really have the money. I had saved up around $3,000 in my checking account at the time from, you know, working at the grocery store or mowing lawns and doing that kind of stuff. So I spent, I think, 60% of my checking or my money to go to these two tournaments in a row where I won $0. But after that second one, I was picked up and recruited by Complexity. And then all of a sudden, my travel and accommodations and a lot of my expenses were covered, which really changed the landscape for me and the opportunities that were available.
Right. It's kind of that thing where you kind of have to invest in yourself, that if you wouldn't have taken that leap, you know, put over half your savings in the pot and said, hey, I'm going to go to Sweden and, you know, put you on this voyage.
Yeah. My dad had this great quote that I'll never forget. He's like, there's worse things to spend all your money on in your 20s than a couple trips to Europe. So,
yeah, exactly. The experience alone is worth it.
Absolutely.
So what was it like kind of, you know, playing in a big stadium, then eventually kind of winning this, you know, huge event and everything that came with it?
Yeah, I think the first really big event that I played was the International in 2014. We got third place, but it was pretty nerve-wracking overall. Very, very high stakes, high pressure environment, playing for hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was a life-changing amount of money. I think each of my teammates, we all won like 100K at that event, which is, we were young 20s, right? It was life-changing stuff. So it was, I think once you kind of get into the game, it's pretty easy to lose yourself in it, which is one of the reasons why I think gaming, or especially Dota 2, is so popular, because it really does take all of your focus and all of the little distractions and stressful triggers of life are kind of forgotten when you're so laser focused. So that's kind of I think that's the addicting part that people really get behind.
So it was like kind of winning it all, kind of that experience.
Yeah, so in 2015 we won the International, right? And that was our biggest achievement of my life, I would say. It was pretty surreal. I don't think that we had expectations of winning really ever. I think our big thing is always just trying to be in the picture, right? And then maybe you get lucky, right? And that's kind of what happened. So we found ourselves in the finals. We didn't really feel like we had much to lose, so we just played our best, and our best was good enough to take it. And that was a very significant part in all of our lives, and it changed sort of it changed a lot, but it almost, we still just ended up playing Dota for the next 5 years and doing exactly what we were doing before we won that big event. So just really the love of the game, and it took care of us, which is nice.
So did you kind of foresee when you were kind of competing early on that it was going to evolve to what it is today, where you have these $40 million prize pools and stuff like that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the battle pass and all the crowdfunding stuff that really boosted up the prize pool didn't exist when I was, going to Europe for those Heroes of New Earth events. I think it was really a lot of just addiction, right? Like, I was just addicted to the game. I was addicted to the community. I wanted to be somebody amongst my peers. And those kind of drivers just kept us going and putting all of our effort into being the best that we could be. And then all of a sudden, there was a $1 million tournament out of nowhere. And hey, we were some of the best players in the game. So, no, I don't think any of us really saw it coming. I think we saw a lot of the StarCraft players before us who were professional esport athletes, which is, that was pretty remarkable. And that's what kind of inspired me watching a lot of the MLG events, and some of the events in Korea. But I always knew those guys were way better gamers than I was. But the meta changed, right? RTS and single player games kind of faded out, and teamwork games like MOBA and Counter-Strike really took off.
Definitely. So let's kind of talk about your transitioning from the competitive side to the business side. Why'd you kind of do that? Do you kind of miss competing now that you're in the business side?
Well, yeah, I definitely miss competing, and I did walk away from it. I walked away during COVID, right? I was actually, the day Trump announced the travel ban was the day before I was supposed to get on a flight to go to Los Angeles for the LA major. And at that point, I really, dropped out of, I was living in Stockholm, Sweden at the time, playing for Ninjas in Pajamas. And I just said, hey, I'm going to go try and do something else. And was that a mistake? I don't know. It's hard to say, right? Like, you live and you learn, hindsight 2020. I do know that I have a desire and an ambition to enable esports rather than just participate in them. And I do think that I have the right experiences in mind to sort of lead the next generation of esport gamers. Our industry has been sort of taken over by speculators in some capacity. People that said, hey, this kind of looks like professional sports. Let's do all the same things. Let's commercialize this. And by and large, I don't think that's really played out the way they hoped it would play out. Mostly because the internet and esports is its own unique, innovative thing. So it needs a unique and innovative solution in order to grow it. And that takes a lot of hard work and creativity and trial and error. And yeah, I still feel like I'm a relatively young guy in the game, so I've got some years to sort of build out that vision, I think.
Well, yeah, I'm sure any org would be happy to sign you, but I think it kind of is the perfect segue into Noun Esports. So tell us about the organization, what it is, and why it was formed.
Nouns Esports originally just started off as a bit of like a vanity project. NounsDAO is an Ethereum NFT collection. And a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. So basically all of these individuals, they buy these tokens or NFTs known as nouns, which are just like these pixelated funny art. And that basically gives them the opportunity to submit proposals and vote on proposals about what to do with their treasury. That treasury is formed by the sale of those NFTs. So, you know, the first noun sold for 600 ETH, the next one sold for 70 ETH, and all of a sudden you've got 670 ETH to govern for those two or three noun holders. And that, you know, they sell one noun a day forever. And I think we're on like noun 900 something at this point. Project's been going on for like 3 years and treasury is sitting around, I think it's like 10 million bucks or something at the moment, but now it's just given out, I think close to $50 million in grants and proposals over the past 3 years. And they're just a really, really unique project that's sort of trying to just create more awareness for their brand. And just, yeah, they want, you know, the beauty of a token is that nobody really knows exactly what it means. The token sort of takes on the ethos of its community. So whatever those token holders vote to enable, that's kind of what Nouns is about. And Nouns Esports has actually raised over $3 million from these proposals to enable us to grow our own kind of sub brand underneath Nouns DAO known as Nouns Esports.
Well, yeah. So what kind of, tell us a little bit about that. How's it different than traditional esports organizations, or, you know, what are some similarities?
Yeah, it's not too different from most of the esport orgs that you're aware of. You know, we have a Dota team, a Counter-Strike team, some Smash players. We had some Unite players. We've got a female Counter-Strike team, and they sort of, you know, really just take up our logo and represent us in competitions under the banner of Nouns Esports. The really unique thing is the way that we are funded and the fact that like we don't have investors, right? Like we never had to, you know, put anybody else on our cap table or give up equity. We're kind of just like this entity that is distributing funds to players to support them to keep representing Nouns in their competitions.
So how do you decide what games to play and, you know, what titles to get into?
Yeah, so I think it's really up to the people that are running the team. You know, we submit the proposals to NounsDAO, right? And we tell them, you know, in our latest proposal, we're like, hey, we want to have a large presence in Counter-Strike. We want to have a large presence in Dota, in Smash. And then they agree or vote to, you know, vote for that proposal to go forward. So in some sense, they're the ones deciding which kind of games we go into. But the ones that we decide to pitch are the ones that we personally care the most about, right? I was a professional Dota 2 player for almost 10 years. I played tons of Counter-Strike growing up. I played tons of Smash growing up. And those are the reasons, or some of the reasons why we choose to go into those games.
Interesting. So they kind of take your recommendations, but ultimately it's voted on by the token holders.
Yeah. And we want to do what's fun for us, right? Like, I don't want to go run a League of Legends team, right? I don't care about League of Legends. I'm not going to enjoy watching our League of Legends. I'm not even going to watch our League of Legends team play if we had one, because you see what I mean? Like, it's not fun for me. But if there was, you know, somebody like me, right, who loved League of Legends and was running Nouns Esports, they'd be more likely to have that team. So it's really just a unique makeup of the people that are involved and what we care about.
Does the organization compete in any NFT or blockchain based games? I know Axie Infinity had created a esports community. Is something that there's any interest in?
I think there's definitely some interest from us, but so far we haven't really participated in any Web3 games. Axie is a bit of an anomaly in terms of its popularity. Most Web3 games have very, very, very little audience. And that's something we're exploring a little bit more this year as some of those games are getting further along in their development cycles. You know, we've got our eyes on some games, I think, like Shrapnel, if you've heard of that one. I think that's really compelling and interesting. There's a Wild Card. There's a couple others that maybe have something going for them, but esports is something that is created over time due to an intense demand from a large audience to figure out who's the best. And so some of these developed, you know, you'll see developers like Blizzard with Overwatch that basically tried to force esports at the onset of its game isn't really a real strategy. because there wasn't necessarily a demand to know who's the best, or there wasn't an intense enough demand to understand who was the best. And that's why, like, Dota, CS, and Smash, the games that we're in, these games are 20 years old at this point, and they have large communities that actually care about, you know, those competitions.
That makes sense. So what kind of got you involved first in the, you know, crypto Web3 kind of scene?
Curiosity, right? Like, I left esports, right? We sold Evil Geniuses. I exited there. I was, you know, I left my professional Dota 2 playing career to explore other opportunities. And in actuality, there really wasn't that many opportunities. And when I started learning about crypto and its decentralized nature and its abilities to sort of empower communities to feel that kind of connectivity that I feel like was lacking in esports, and especially esports teams, I feel like there's an opportunity to sort of like reinvent the esports team model here that actually makes fans feel like they're a part of something rather than just a spectator watching a group of executives carry trophies. So really, yeah, I've just been trying to learn more and more about crypto and becoming an expert in that field, so that way I can, you know, take that expertise to esports and sort of help it make progress. You know, crypto is an invention of the internet, right? It's, you know, it's right on the frontiers of new stuff. And I do think that it can play a large role in enabling digital culture to be more successful. And I think that's what esports really needs, because empowering, you know, or convincing, you know, people try, like Call of Duty, Overwatch, like they tried like this regional team-based model. Just doesn't make sense, right? Like, we're all playing online. None of the players are actually from where they're playing for. You know, people aren't attending physical events on a regular basis like they would in, you know, baseball, basketball, football, etc. So we kind of need to have a unique solution. And I think getting people, putting tokens, right, putting NFTs in their wallet is going
to
help.
So to shift gears a little bit, let's talk about the North American Dota Challengers League. So what is it and why was it formed?
All right. So North American Dota Challengers League. I got back into Dota last summer. I went to work at a ESL Berlin major as an analyst and got to reconnect with a bunch of people from Dota and sort of just fell back in love with the scene and the community. For the longest time, or I was working at Esports Engine, which is an esports production company, for 2 years, and we didn't do anything with Dota. So I was kind of out of the scene completely. And I decided, well, if we're not going to do anything with the company that we're working with, maybe I should just start something on my own. So I restarted up my league. I used to run this league back in 2018, 2019. We did 3 seasons. And yeah, we restarted it. We brought back season 4 in August of last year. And now we just began our season 6, and it's, yeah, just the North American Dota League, but it's a little bit different and it's got some unique monetization that hasn't really been done before in Dota. So just to give it a little bit more context, our league has a participation fee, which, believe it or not, is pretty novel for Dota. Everybody's been pretty much participating for free as both a player and a viewer for the past 10 years. So yeah, everybody pays to play, and that creates, you know, a large income stream for the league. But then we also offer team owners, or our biggest supporters, the opportunity to basically be to run their own esports teams within the league. So we initially have the Player Combine, which is like an in-house league where players show up. It's kind of like a tryout to impress the team owners. And then we have this season, we have 12 team owners who are going to draft all of their players via an auction this upcoming Wednesday. So they'll basically get to, and then these players get like basically matchmaked with other players to form a team, and then they'll compete in a tournament. So it's, yeah, it's, you know, putting together a team of 5 guys and practicing and showing up for tournaments, it can be a bit of a task. So we kind of do that for them. And yeah, it's been going relatively well. People seem to enjoy it.
Amazing. Well, definitely, if you're an aspiring pro or want to get in the scene, you should definitely check out the league. So to bring it all towards the end, what advice do you have for any individuals looking to go pro and kind of follow the path you've been on?
Well, being a pro is a really tough route in esports. There's You know, some of the games have been around for a long time, so you might have a lot of catching up to do. I generally tell people to take advantage of any competitive opportunities you have to play with people that are better than you. You know, playing up to somebody's level is really the best way to improve at a quick rate. And then also, don't just grind matchmaking or whatever is set up for you. Like, participate in that team environment if it's a team game, or even if it's an individual game, find some people that are, you know, in your camp that you can chat with and collaborate with to improve at a more rapid rate. Doing it all by yourself is really hard, and it's really unlikely that you're going to be able to, you know, figure it out, I think, on your own.
That's some amazing advice. So what's your favorite part about working in the esports and video game business?
Well, I think my favorite part is being able to enable other gamers to enjoy themselves, right? Esports doesn't necessarily just have to be about the professional player, right? That's sort of the beauty of it. You know, in Dota, we're kind of an aging demographic. A lot of our audience is later 20s, or if not into their 30s or 40s at this point. And the beauty of esports is it's not like professional sports where we get sidelined after we sort of, you know, get past our best years, right? I could see a Dota league running up until my 60s or 70s, to be honest. And we could have a bunch of old geezers getting together every Friday night to enjoy our favorite pastime. And yeah, we might be a little bit worse at the game and our reaction speeds might be a little bit slower than they were in our 20s, but it's not like professional sports where if we go out there and try and play basketball, we're going to throw out a hip. So we can really get you know, people, you know, we can create some long-term collaborations, and we've got a long runway, I think, to keep this thing going.
Amazing. So I try to end each episode with my three questions. What's your favorite game to watch?
My favorite game to watch is Dota. And second to that, I would say is Super Smash Brothers Melee.
So what's your favorite game to play?
My favorite game to play is, once again, probably Dota. And then second to that, it would be Dark and Darker. And I like this, you know, second to that, because Dota is kind of just my default answer for everything. It's such a huge part of my life.
So what's your favorite video game character?
Oh, favorite video game character. Good question. Let's go with, wow, I'll go with Uther from Warcraft 3 campaigns. He's a paladin. People will know him. He's good.
Okay, awesome. Well, you know, thank you so much for joining me. This was extremely insightful. So how about where they can connect with you and learn about what you're doing?
I'm all over a bunch of social media, so you'll be able to find me just about anywhere. My biggest ones are Twitter, and then if you're from like the more professional working world, probably LinkedIn. You can connect with me there, and happy to chat about NA Dota, now it's esports, or yeah, anything gaming esports related. I'm your guy.
Awesome. Everyone, make sure to check it out. They're working on some great stuff with the league and the team. And follow me on Twitter, Justin J ESQ, and check Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube for all our past episodes.